Everyone, and thanks for listening to Lit Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Thea. Today, I'm joined by Magnus Lindqvist for a conversation about his latest book, The Business of Speaking, The 10 Commandments to Becoming a Successful Speaker. Magnus is a visionary, futurologist, and trendspotter, renowned for his subversively humorous and insightful keynotes, combining academic rigor with Hollywood storytelling. Over nearly three decades, he has captivated audiences globally, sharing profound insights into creativity, innovation, and future trends. The Business of Speaking is the result of the author having done thousands of speaking gigs around the world and knowing the industry inside out. It presents 10 essential rules to guide anyone who wants to launch themselves as a speaker. Well, hello, Magnus. It's a great pleasure to have you once again with us on the Lit Radio podcast. How are you today?
I am good. I'm recovering from a business trip to India, which was very rewarding and fun, but of course a little bit taxing. But So in short, I'm good.
Great. Well, great to hear that. Well, today we're here to talk about your latest book, The Business of Speaking. So my first question is, why did you decide to write it?
Well, having been a speaker for 20 years, I've noticed that every once in a while people would ask me, you know, why did you become a speaker and how can I become a speaker? They would ask in curiosity, and it's a wonderful profession. And I realized that I owe these people a really good answer. So 6 or 7 years ago, I wrote the blog post that I kept sharing with people. And it was in essence 10 commandments based on, you know, the tricks of the trade that I discovered in my career. And I decided eventually to turn it into a book. I write in the book that it's me pushing the elevator back down to the ground floor, to the people who are like me 20 years ago, who want to make a living doing speeches. Or it might be people in my profession already who want to just hear stories from the trenches. Or it might be people who are in a career transition. They've had a long, good career doing something, medical research, PhD, CEO, and now they want to capitalize on that knowledge in the exciting field of public speaking. So I think that answers the questions why.
Absolutely. And yeah, it's so amazing. But before we talk about your speaker's career, speaking career, and also the content of the book, I would like to ask you, because you've already written quite a few books, what is the writing process for you when writing a book, and what was the writing process for this book specifically?
So I always have a document in my computer with book ideas. And it could be an observation I made, or a really funky title, or something that piques my interest. Most of these ideas never reach any kind of escape velocity. Some do, and when I sign a publishing contract, there's usually some kind of format in place, whether it's the business of speaking, or the reset book, or manifesto. You know, there's the embryo for what I try to capture. Then I have a really fun research phase. And I say fun because it creates flow. It creates everything you see and read and observe and hear goes into snippets. It's like a scrapbook. So there, you know, and after a while, I usually have like a 30-page documents of random quotes, snippets, links to check out, thoughts from waking up at 2 a.m. And then comes the semi-fun part, which is puzzling. I try to write some kind of synopsis. Where do we start? Where do we go from there? And then, you know, number one, 1A, 2A, 3A, 1A, B, C, D, and so on. That's puzzling. Then comes the not so fun part, which is the actual typing. Fortunately, because I've done such a big research part and the puzzling of it. The typing first draft usually goes fairly quick. I'm usually able to type out a first draft in about a month or two. Then, of course, as Mark Twain once said, writing is rewriting. Second draft, usually another couple of months. And then comes that very necessary, painful part of revising typos, taking out things that don't work, making sure sources are in place, and so on. And I think, yeah, I mean, it was a process that I developed over the years, and I'm already busy working on my next book with that process, this time with a co-author, but that will be the subject of a future interview.
Absolutely, and I'm looking forward to it. But thank you for sharing your process. So I'm hoping it might be helpful for listeners who might be thinking of writing a business book. So, but now let's talk about your speaking career. Could you tell us how it all started out?
Well, we become in life what we don't fail at. So, I was a reluctant business school student. I went to business school, I think, to please my parents or to fit in. I was not brave enough to lead the kind of bohemian lifestyle necessary to pursue my first love, which was filmmaking. I mean, the idea of living in a basement just to make a movie kind of frightened me. So I was stuck in business school. After business school, I did a short stint in management consulting, an even shorter stint in advertising. I sold cat litter. I wrote a novel. I went to journalism school. I went to film school. Most things failed, and the shambles of failure, I kind of glued the pieces together and put up my first free public speech in January 2003. So that was almost to the day 22 years ago. And that was, yeah, there was no doubt in my mind that I would fail at this profession too. But yeah, there was something in there. And the next year I organized it again. It had grown a bit and I kept doing it. And I think after 3 or 4 years, I eventually was able to make a meager living off of public speaking. But that's how it all started.
Very interesting, and I think that story shows that you can't expect for it to happen straight away. It might take years for you to see some results.
Yeah, I think that's true for many careers. I'd say, you know, two ways to have a career. One is top down, I call it. When you have a vocation or a skill or a talent that you're really good at, Swedish tennis player Bjorn Borg comes to mind. You know, he plays only tennis from, I think, age 6 or 7 or even 5, and so on. Most of us are not like that. We work bottom up. So we experiment our way forward. We will fail, we will stumble, but then eventually we might find something that fits that sweet spot of, you know, you like it, you can earn money off of it, and other people appreciate you for it.
Yeah, I think that's a very good message because I mean I know your opinions of social media, so but yeah, we live in a world where yeah we see people succeeding overnight, and yeah we all expect we have to find our passion in our early 20s, which is not the case here. There's some.
No, that you're right. And I think, well, first of all, I mean, often when we say overnight success, we don't see the work that has been done underneath. Even young people who find success have usually spent years perfecting something or trying their way forward. They just knew from an earlier age what they wanted to do than maybe you and I. But like you say, in finding your passion, it's a cliche that makes you think that we should like something from day one, and that's or something should click from day one, and that's very rarely the case. Very often, to your point, there is a struggle involved. There are years in the dark, and in my case, years of doing it in the dark for free. So you have to find other ways to make a living. like cat litter sales.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so I'll go back to speaking now, and let me ask you, what makes up a good speech?
Oh, I don't think there's a recipe for a good speech. I'd say it's like a good brand. The really good brands in the world, they're special. You can't really say why. Is it something in the label or how they're made, or is it something they've done or something they sponsored? I don't know. It's a feeling they induce. And I think it's the same for speech. The best feedback you can get as a speaker is if people say, "That was amazing. I don't really remember what it was about, but it was amazing." And I've seen, good speeches from all over the place. I've seen young people deliver good speeches, old people, men, female, non-binary individuals. I've seen famous film directors like J.J. Abrams do it. I've seen uncles and aunts who are amateurs deliver great speeches at weddings. So I'd say anyone, anywhere can make a good speech.
Well, I think that's great to hear because yeah, some people might not be thinking that's the case. But all right, for those people who are thinking of starting a speaking career, how would you describe the business of speaking to them?
Well, let's start with business in general. You tend to do good business if you're good at something that is also difficult, right? And I once upon a time, photography was quite difficult. Now it's relatively easy, which is why the business of photography has gone from bad to worse in the past couple of years. Something similar is probably true about speaking. Once upon a time, it was quite rare that somebody would get up on a stage and have some, a slide deck to show and tell a story. Now, I think through the ubiquity of TED Talk, social media, video blogs, and so on, we've become much more attuned to stagecraft. So I think delivering a good speech is more common today than it was a few decades ago, which is why many conferences now, they don't pay perhaps for their speakers, or they invite people who are there because of their title. They might be founder of or chief executive at. So the business is larger, but perhaps a little bit more difficult to navigate. I'd say if you want to make a living as a speaker, if you want to do business as speaking, you have to think about what's difficult to do. And of course, delivering consistency at a high level and being able to adapt without diluting your message, depending on if you're at an IT conference in Kochi, India, or at a plastics manufacturer in Belgium, or a literary event in Tallahassee, Florida. I mean, that's difficult. It's hard to be consistent. I mean, for everyone, regardless of profession. The second thing I'd say is you have to be willing to do 100 bad talks. And some of them will be the worst kinds of bad because you might actually sometimes think that they're good. You might go out of there thinking, well, I got applause and some people were smiling and two people even wanted to shake my hand. Yeah, that was a good talk. Trust us, it was not good. People like saying good and they like giving applause. And the number of people who will give you honest feedback are relatively few. So I'd say that's one of the challenges today, the 100 bad talk thing. Because while we have become more attuned to living in the public domain, the public domain has also become less forgiving. If you make a fool out of yourself somewhere, there's bound to be a camera there capturing it. And so your chance of trying and failing and trying yet again has somewhat narrowed. But, it can be done. It's still being done. It will still be done in a number of years. So I'd say that's a sort of fly-in on overview on the business of speaking.
Yeah, well, what I found really interesting in the book is you actually advise people not to get into speaking.
Yeah, well, experience is what middle-aged men call their mistakes, I guess. And I think in our reverence of all things youth, it's become kind of prohibited to talk about regret. I have no regrets and so on. But I think that's a very dumb way of living. I think regret is a better word for learning. Right? If you put your hand on the stove, you're going to regret it. If you do things in life that don't turn out the way you hoped or that you knew was going to be a bad idea, of course you're going to regret it. And there are a number of things I regret in my public speaking career. I'm not sure I would do it over if I would live again, not least because there are other fun professions out there. And also in the book, I have a stern warning because if you have a slight case of narcissism, this public speaking career will aggravate it. It's gonna screw up your family life. It's gonna screw up your relationships. And eventually, it's gonna screw up your chance of holding down any kind of normal job outside of the public speaking circus. So that's the warning. I'm still in this business. I mean, I'm still in this business, and I was going to say I love it. I love it on some days. I hate it on others, but that's no difference than being a CTO or a janitor.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, but do you think that anyone can be a speaker?
Yeah, I do. I do think anyone, if you have a chronic fear of being on stage, that can add to the nuisance. It can create a really powerful and interesting message once you overcome the phobia. If you are dull and dry, you can use that as your sound. I think talent or predisposition and interest only gets you that far. So I'd say this is an open field and it's so welcoming, right? It's a place where diversity was part of its founding, right? We have public speakers because we want outsiders. There's no point in having people who look like the board come to speak to the board. There's no point of having somebody who knows exactly what the company knows to talk about what the company knows and so on. So it's a very all-encompassing and welcoming industry. And I've seen great speeches being delivered from the least likely sources. So that's a belief I hold, yes. But I also don't think, to repeat my point, it's not that difficult to give a good talk. I mean, it's more common today and we see it more often. And the business of speaking is not about giving a good talk, or sorry, it's not about just giving a good talk.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for sharing that. So now let's talk a little bit about the book. As you mentioned at the beginning of our discussion, you have 10 commandments to becoming a su successful speaker. So, yeah, we won't have time to discuss all of them, but I would like to ask you for a couple. So, you already mentioned the first one, which is Thou shalt wander the earth and do 100 bad speeches, which, yeah, is a great one. But another one that really caught my attention says that the speaker should practice the fine art of rip off and duplicate and shouldn't focus too much on originality, which some people might be really surprised to read. So why do you say that?
Well, I mean, look at all the great artists and bands out there. They usually started out by playing covers, either karaoke lounges or, standing in their rehearsal space doing Deep Purple riffs or trying to wail like Whitney Houston. So that's how we humans learn. We learn by copying or imitating. And to me, I realized fairly early that I'm quite the mediocre thinker. There are so many great philosophers and writers out there and people who have really practiced the truly fine art of deep diving into thoughts and thinking. And I realized fairly early on, I'm never going to be able to do that. But I can try to capture the gist of what they're saying and add a beat to it, like a DJ, and try to get people to dance intellectually, like a DJ of ideas. And also, when you see good speakers talk, you can copy the way they talk, you can copy examples they do, you can copy jokes they have. And the cool thing is that after a while, these things become a part of who you are, and the copy evolution evolves into becoming an original. And it happened for me. I mean, my early talks was in essence a fairly bad mesh of the historian Niall Ferguson, my good friend, the creativity speaker Fredrik Herrén. I had an old boss, Sara Örvall, who I thought was great of giving examples. And I sort of took tidbits of these three individuals, and then I looked at some TED Talks and I put it together. It wasn't very good, but you start getting the wheels in motion and you find these spaces where you all of a sudden have to be a little bit better than you are, and you rise to the occasion. So that's why I talk about R&D, rip off and duplicate. Use the things that resonated with you. Copy shamelessly. It's not about where you take things from, it's about where you take them to.
I like that. It's about where you take things to. Okay, so thou shalt treat middlemen like insects is the seventh rule. So what do you mean by that?
It's my love letter to speaker agencies. I have had the great fortune and privilege to work with a number of them, too numerous to mention here, but you know who you are. And there are many speakers, once they reach a certain stature, start to complain about speaker agencies. And this is my chapter to tell these speakers to shut up. Let's revere the speaker agencies for the insects that they are. Insects can absolutely be irritating, but they are absolute integral, vital to the ecosystem. If we didn't have flies, sad gnats, mosquitoes, beetles, you name it, wasps, the entire ecosystem would collapse quite quickly. And it's the same thing. And I talk in the chapter about, for instance, if you're an executive assistant at a blue chip firm, you're not going to try to reach out to individual speakers. You want somebody to guide you. So you're going to reach out to a speaker agency where an agent will give you one, what they will listen to your demands, what you have in mind, what's the theme, what's the size of the event, what's the budget. And they will give you a selection of, a couple of names in various price ranges. And that will help them. And that will also not only help them to make a decision, it will help them to have a process that they can show off to the rest of the team and do things in due order. So that whole chapter is about revering and respecting the speaker agency. And the speaker agents, who are often young, hungry salespeople who go on to bigger and better things. So if you treat them right, they'll remember your name with positive connotations.
Yeah, and the business of speaking is all about connections, right?
Yeah, connections and reputation and branding. And the thing is, speaker agencies usually take a cut of your fee, and some people, we can call them the takers, are pissed off by that. Other people, the bakers or the makers, see, well, it's not just one pie that can get smaller if people cut into it. This pie is infinite. And if you're going to sustain your career year in and year out, it's good to be kind. It's good to realize that negotiation is that, works when everybody gets what they want. So give the agencies their percentage, willingly share your incoming leads with them, respect the contracts, and you'll have a long life in the business of speaking.
Fascinating. Well, Magnus, I'm not going to ask you about the rest of the commandments. I would encourage our listeners to grab a copy of The Business of Speaking and read more about them. But to finish this really interesting conversation, I have one final question for you. And it's for those listeners who might be thinking of starting a speaking career. What would be your top three tips for them? What are the first three steps that they should take?
Well, first, accept that the itch is in you and it's not going to go away. Once you open the Pandora's box with the words, maybe I should become a speaker, it's never going to leave you. So accept that. There are so many people who don't consider this a real profession, and more power to them. But for us who are in it, it's a weird, crazy, wonderful industry. So, number one, respect the yearning, respect the itch. Number two, let it take time. Do the 100 bad speeches to really do baptism by fuck ups. And find a way to bounce back. There are going to be so many people in the, and as you grow your career, who was going to. They're going to treat you bad or spread rumors about you or disrespect you and so on. These are all obstacles for you to overcome. It will be tough. If you need help, there are so many of us out here who are willing to help you, give you a helping hand or a word of support. We've all been there. We have stories from our trenches that we can share. Number three, there are so many ways also to, once you're in the game as a speaker, once you're earning the income, once you are traveling the world giving great talks, there are so many great ways to reinvent yourself. In Sweden, we have Göran Adlén. I think he's in his mid-60s. For a long time, he's been a future speaker and trend watcher. Then he found a way to become a bodybuilder at age 64. And now he travels around Scandinavia giving talks about that. So, and like I said, this is such an all-encompassing, inclusive, welcoming industry. So throughout your career, if you grow tired of your message and yourself, and trust me, you will grow tired of your message and of yourself, find ways to reinvent yourself. Don't do it too quickly. Savor the success once it comes. But once you find yourself in that kind of downward spin, there are ways of going back up. Like I said, I've been in this business for 20 years. I've had been part of four recessions, during COVID when this business was in essence prohibited except online, the financial crash of 08, and so on. And I've had a numerous down periods in my life as well, and setbacks in my private life. This job has never let me down. It's wonderful, and if you feel that it's for you, welcome. I look forward to listening to you on a stage somewhere in the world someday.
Amazing. Well, thank you very much for those, Magnus, and thank you for this conversation. I found it really intriguing and interesting, and I hope our listeners did so too. So, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Thea.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Make sure you keep an eye on our social media at Lit Publishing on LinkedIn, X, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook for more information about new books and podcasts with thought leaders. See you next time on Lit Radio Podcast.